This is Ethan Winterovich, sales agronomist with CHS Ag Services at Stephen, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Jamie Dickerman. We'll have reports from Don Wick at Min Ag Expo. We'll also hear from Tyler Donaldson at the Wide World of Weeds event. EU officials considering pausing their trade deal with the United States if President Trump follows through on his threat to impose tariffs on EU countries that oppose his plan to take control of Greenland. White House National Economic Advisor Kevin Hassett says last year's trade deal with the EU, along with separate agreement with the UK, greatly expanded U.S. farm exports.
The president has a strong view that it's a national security matter for the U.S. to have more control over Greenland.
Some critics say the move could strain NATO and threaten long-standing alliances. House Foreign Affairs member Madeline Dean of Pennsylvania expressing concern over the potential tariffs.
Denmark, Greenland, the Kingdom of Denmark, that's our ally. It's our friend. So I'm puzzled by the president's threat of tariffs.
The debate comes as U.S. producers still recovering from earlier trade disputes, including the 25% tariff on China and partners trading with Iran. Hassett urging diplomacy moving forward.
It's really a good time for cooler heads to prevail and for us to disregard the rhetoric and get to the table and see if there can't be a deal that was worked out that's best for everybody.
Trade tensions flaring again as the president threatens new tariffs on European countries that oppose the push to take control of Greenland. While the issue may seem far removed from farm country, Policy Solutions President Jay Truitt warns U.S. agriculture could still feel the impact, especially in the specialty market.
The Trump administration has kind of doubled down. I think they found all the pressure points in Europe. It's the, those eight nations that everyone has already heard about. And we're likely to enter into another little tariff skiff. I do think it's a little bit interesting that it's like none of the rest of the leaders of these countries seem to read the art of the deal. To figure out how Trump was actually going to negotiate with them, right? And he's going to start off hard and work his way until he gets something done. You have to assume eventually he's going to get his way here one way or another.
Truitt says the dispute could slow recent progress with European trade partners, even if the overall impact is smaller than the past tariff battles with China.
We do around $13 billion worth of exports still into the European Union, and we thought that we were going to be able to crack some of those markets and open them up. That does put the brakes. This whole thing probably puts the brakes mostly on that. And when you look at it, I think my biggest concern still is that somehow or another Greenland might screw up a trade that flows through Rotterdam. Which is a big thing for a lot of people. So there's a lot of soybeans go through Rotterdam, not to stay there, but go through there on their way to somewhere else.
Truitt says while Europe has never been an easy market for U.S. agriculture, recent momentum now facing uncertainty as the tariff threats re-enter the picture. Well, Min Ag Expo underway in Mankato, bringing together corn and soybean growers. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Don Wick is there and has this update.
Jamie, USDA's Farmer Bridge assistance payments will be coming out at the end of next month. Congress is also considering additional relief for farmers. Minnesota Soybean Growers Association past president Jamie Beyer says the need is there.
I think there's an opportunity to cover more losses, and I think there are folks in the government that recognize that there were a multitude of disruptions over the past 2 years. That, this last payment, the press release from the USDA recognized high input costs, and so now we're looking for some of that trade disruption to be recouped too.
Beyer, who is a new member of the American Soybean Association Executive Committee, said work must be done to move through the large soybean supplies. That includes exports and domestic usage.
And we're continuing to chew on those issues, making sure we can use bushels in our renewable fuels and biodiesel, and also get those exported to the countries that want to pay.
Minnesota soybean grower delegates met this morning. A legislative panel with House and Senate Agriculture Committee leaders and Ag Commissioner Tom Peterson are on the agenda this afternoon. From Min Ag Expo in Mankato, Minnesota, I'm Don Wick.
The farm economy getting off to a difficult start this year. Terrain Ag Interim Executive Director Matt Clark says grain producers facing continued pressure from large supply, weak prices, even as some livestock sectors showing modest improvements.
Unfortunately, we're off to a bit of a tough start for 2026. There's no way around that. In some ways, the cattle market had kind of a shock to end 2025. Most of that market has recovered a little bit, so that's good. Not all the way recovered, but we've seen some improvement there, at least on some prices. So for your cow-calf guys, they're doing okay still. Probably some losses upchain. But the real struggle right now is on the grain side. Not only was 2025 a struggle, we started off 2026 with an update from the USDA that was probably a little more hard than what nearly all of us thought. So you had a scenario where corn production went higher. Most everybody was thinking it would go a little bit lower, soybeans as well. And as a result, we have a lot of stocks to work through in 2026, and the prices are tough.
Clark says the financial stress is visible across farm country, especially in equipment sales and balance sheets tied to grain operations.
You see it when you're out driving, kind of around in some of the grain areas, just kind of hear it when I'm talking with our customers or the customers of Farm Credit. And two, you see it through some of the telling data, such as tractor sales or combine sales being very, very low. Historically low, actually. The concern still on the grain side as I go into 2026 is still pretty high. What I've done mostly is just try to lay out kind of what the cash flow scenario is going to be with government payments and then with the remaining grain sales. So if you think about a month and a half or so, we'll get the Farm Bridge Assistant payments. That'll be some money. Again, probably not enough to make everyone whole, but again, helpful.
USA Pulse is expanding its national footprint with the addition of the North Harvest Bean Growers Association. The organization represents farmers and processors of American-grown pulses, including dry peas, lentils, chickpeas, and dry beans, working towards the goal of doubling pulse production and consumption by 2030. Bringing North Harvest into the coalition strengthens those efforts and adds significant scale and regional influence. North Harvest Bean Growers, representing more than 2,800 farm families in Minnesota and North Dakota, its members farm about 850,000 acres of dry beans valued at $467 million in 2025. This is the Red River Farm Network. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. There are attempts being made to attach year-round E15 language to must-pass continuing resolution to fund the government. With an uncertain export situation, Minnesota Biofuels Association Executive Director Brian Werner says farmers need this domestic demand.
Yeah, no, and I mean, we've seen some of the reports that have come out where if E15 year-round nationwide would eat up another 2 billion bushels of corn, which, you know, right now getting that additional demand domestically is really important. And so that's, you know, not only E15, but I think we're also looking at, you know, EPA needs to finalize the renewable volume obligations for 26 and 27. So that would provide a really good demand signal as well, because, yeah, I mean, right now we've got a lot of supply out there. I mean, farmers are, you know, thankfully becoming more and more efficient, you know, yielding more per acre, which is great. But we also need a place for all that to go. And ethanol is one really good place where we can, you know, eat up a lot more of those bushels.
Werner sees an avenue to pass the E15 language.
There's been negotiations and an agreement that's been made on some legislative language that can be included in this omnibus government funding bill that needs to be enacted here before the end of this month. So we're really just doing a lot of education with our federal delegation, letting them know that this is a golden opportunity to finally get year-round E15 done and to get it off of our plate so that we can start focusing on some other things from an advocacy perspective. Because this has been, you know, one of our biggest frustrations is that, you know, we've got a fuel here that can be used in, you know, 96% of all vehicles on the road today that is more affordable. It saves consumers money.
Werner participating in MinAg Expo today in Mankato. U.S. soybean growers had an up and down 2025. Iowa State University professor of economics Chad Hart says the story was mostly about China.
For soybeans, we continue to see world markets shrinking for us as we look right now. Now, I mentioned the troubles with China. They went a few months without buying U.S. soybeans for a while, but they are now back in their traditional spot as our top market. But it also shows how tenuous that position is, that the idea is a small move from China dwarfs large movements in other markets. In fact, as we look here, as you look at places like Mexico, Egypt, Indonesia, we are finding growth there, but it's just not enough to offset the swings that we see coming from the Chinese demand. In fact, even though they have moved back up to be that number one market for us right now, compared to last year at this time, they have bought 400 million bushels less.
2025 saw rapid growth in soybean export markets. Hart expecting that to continue in 2026.
USDA sees that domestic crush continuing to build here. We're adding another 70 million bushels to that. And like I say, a lot of that is being based upon growth in renewable diesel, especially given the EPA's recent proposals for the renewable fuel standard that would lead to more biofuel production. The challenge, though, really is in the export line, and as you can see here, USDA is showing some growth there of about 140 million bushels there. A lot of that growth would be expected to come from China.
Canadian Cattle Association says the Chinese market expected to reopen to Canadian beef, although few details available. Canadian beef has been shut out of China since December of 2021 following an atypical case of BSE in Alberta. Earlier this month, Canada and China announced an agreement to lower tariffs on products such as canola, seed, and meal, with Canada also expecting China to accelerate the resumption of Canadian beef imports. National Cattlemen's Beef Association says livestock producers remaining frustrated after gray wolf delisting language was removed from a recent appropriations bill. NCBA Director of Government Affairs Garrett Edmonds says the NCBA now turning their attention to the legislation of the Pet and Livestock Protection Act that would provide a long-term solution for producers impacted by wolves.
Multiple administrations have agreed the wolf needs to be delisted. One of the big issues that for our producers especially is certainty around their operations. We continue to see this flip-flop in regulatory guidance on the wolf listing itself. And so that's the reason, number one, why we're trying to approach this fix legislatively. It needs to be codified in Congress so we can stop the regulatory flip-flopping.
The Pet and Livestock Protection Act has already passed the House, now awaits action in the Senate. NCBA says depredation losses and public safety concerns continue to grow in rural communities as farmers wait for clarity. This is the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. The Wild World of Weeds workshop is in Fargo today. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has this report.
Speaking with NDSU Extension Weed Control Specialist Joe Eichley. Joe, it's the Wild World of Weeds workshop. Another year in the books, 2026 finally here. What's your look at the current landscape of the weed situation here in the Northern Plains?
Yeah, so there's really two weeds we continue to talk about, and unfortunately they are not getting any better. That's kochia and water hemp. Attendees of the workshop today are going to hear about both of those in volume. So this has been a problem in the valley, particularly the southern half of the valley, for going on 20 years now. But it's continuing to spread across North Dakota and even up into Canada. So plenty of folks up in Manitoba are now having to deal with water hemp, unfortunately. So those are the big two as we continue to talk about, because they continue to get worse from a herbicide resistance standpoint and a geographical footprint area. They just continue to spread that way as well.
Where do we go from here?
And that's the challenge. So as we continue to get more herbicide resistance, herbicides still by and large are the cheapest and most effective tool we have for weed control. Now in some of our kochia populations and some of our water hemp populations, we're at a point where we don't have the answer in the form of a chemical for some of our crops. So this does mean we have to look more at integrated approaches, whether that's cover crops, if you can make those work in your operation. Tillage, not a popular option for many, but some folks are going back to more tillage. We have things in the landscape like the weed zappers, those are helping out. So there's these other integrated approaches that we're just focusing more on. From a herbicide perspective, one of our messaging is that you need to have tank mixes that are effective against the weed you're going after.
What are some of the takeaways that you'd like farmers to leave here with?
One of the main things as we talk more about resistance is that we do have to admit that there are several clean fields around the landscape. Anyone driving around can notice that, but as weed scientists, we kind of focus on the bad fields and really try and fix those or find solutions for those fields. So weed control is getting more difficult, but there are still plenty of folks out there that are getting it done correctly. So if someone kind of listens to our updates about resistance, it is a real threat that we want people to pay attention to, but there are ways to manage it, and we are sharing some of those today throughout various talks from some speakers from all corners of North Dakota.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
Reporting agriculture's business, this is the Red River Farm Network.